I'm Norm Shealy. Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness. Your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to Infinite Consciousness Tonight. Thanks for listening. Tonight I have with us Ariel and Shia Kane, and we're going to talk about their recent book, How to Have a Match Made in Heaven, a Transformational Approach to Dating, Relating, and Marriage. I have interviewed them before on my other show, and they have quite good information on how to help us get along with others in the world and have better relationships with those people that we love. So, how are you, Ariel and Shia?
We're really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on tonight.
Before
we get started, tell us a little bit about you guys and where people can find your book and people can find your work and look just a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, we've been together for about 31 years. We've been married for going on 29 of those 31 years. We started out as ordinary people who bickered and did all those things that we learned growing up around the folks we grew up around and the world we grew up in. And somewhere around 26 years ago, things shifted for us. Now, we were looking at everything, every workshop we could take. I mean, I took my first workshop in 1972. Where I was trying to become enlightened. Didn't work for quite a while, but about 26 years ago, something clicked, and it's lasted, and it's had a lasting effect on our relationship.
Luckily, around about that time, Shia really fell back into being an anthropologist, which is what he has a degree in. And we've developed what we call a transformational approach, which is why our website is called transformationmadeeasy.com. And people can find all four of our books there, including the most recent one, How to Have a Match Made in Heaven, which, by the way, I don't know if we had this when we spoke to you last, Eva. It's won the Mom's Choice Book Award, and it just got nominated as a finalist in two categories in the Book of the Year Award, both self-help and in relationships. So,
congratulations! No, you didn't tell. You didn't have that last time. If you did, you didn't tell me. Congratulations!
Yeah. So it's really wonderful, and I think aside from the fact that I personally think, like you said, there's a lot of really great information in our book. It's also revolutionary in that. I don't know of any other book that ties in videos. We've worked with clients for many, many years. We eventually started a video mini session
subscription series. And we finish each other's sentences.
We do. And it got to be so popular and so powerful, we thought that would be a brilliant basis for a book because we were so inspired by these people.
So if somebody buys the book, they also get the URLs where they can go up online and actually see the session that the chapters are based on.
So they can really see people's face transform in a moment. So our approach is not psychological, it's anthropological.
And it only takes a moment to have your life transform. With change, it happens over time. It takes hard work. It's about setting goals and trying to achieve what you think is deficient in your life. Transformation starts with that you're perfect exactly as you are, and in fact, you can't be any different than you are in the current moment. So it's more about relaxing into your life than trying to get somewhere, New Year's resolutions and all that stuff. I mean, God knows we all have tried that, and for the first 14 years of our relationship, I think. Well, not a kid.
So we did too.
Can you give our listeners a little mini show of what you do?
Sure. Let's talk about the basis of.
Let's talk about listening.
Oh Yeah.
So that's the basis. Really listening is a phenomenal skill set that very few of us have. At least not, we're not good at it yet, but it's very easily developed if you know to look for certain things. First off, most of us think about what's being said rather than hear what somebody is saying from their point of view. So we're constantly in our thoughts while they're talking, agreeing, disagreeing, see if you already know it, not liking the turn of phrase that the speaker used, whatever it is, not liking, say, my New York accent, if you will. when we're in Germany working, not liking that we're American and bringing enlightenment. You know, it should be somebody of their ethnic background. So listening is when you actually hear what a person is saying from their point of view without agreeing or disagreeing, but intentionally getting behind their point of view as though it's yours. So you take on their point of view to hear what they're saying rather than seeing whether it fits in, comparing it to what you already know. The end result of that as a byproduct is it pulls you into the current moment of your life, and transformation happens when you get into the current moment of your life. But you see, we've all been raised in a future thinking culture and society, and so we're all looking for the next best thing, more, different, better, something in the future that's going to be better than where we are right now. And so we trash the current moment of our lives in hopes of finding something better, but you always are in the current moment of your life. So if you trash this moment, even if you get what you want, you trash that one too. So, that there's no satisfaction for people. You know that song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction?
Yeah.
Well, it happens when you're trashing what you have, thinking something better. A different partner, a different job, a different locale. It doesn't really matter. This is all there is, and that's when Ariel's going to talk about the three principles of instantaneous transformation.
I'd like to ask a question, though, before I forget.
Oh,
I will,
please.
If I don't ask it. When, let's just say, since you're talking about listening, we have a partner, and we get into an argument about something. And we're trying to prove this is something that happens in my own personal relationship. So it's the only way I know how to, I'm not necessarily using it for myself because I've kind of recognized it and work on it myself, but I'm sure there are other people that do these same things too. But my partner will say something to me, and I'll start arguing back to him. Well, I did whatever. He'll go, why did you do this? Blah, blah, blah. I did this because blah, 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 or whatever it is. You know, I give a defensive mechanism because I may feel that he thinks I'm stupid or I'm not capable or qualified or smart or whatever he is. So I lay, and my background's in litigation, so I lay out all of these facts for why I did this thing, whatever it is. Whether it's why didn't I take the trash to the dump on this day, or why did I, whatever the thing is. Where his point of view that I realize is that he thinks that I'm trying to make a point that I'm right. Where that's not my objective, but all my objective is making a defense for why I did what I did. So for people who do that, how do you fix it? Does that make sense?
Well,
if I were him, if I understand what you say correctly, if he's asking you why didn't you do something, and you lay out all the reasons for why you didn't, because that's how your mind works, if I were him, if I'm following it correctly, I would think that you were having a bid to be right also. That being said, if somebody comes at you in an accusing type manner, it's a lot more challenging to be centered.
Yeah, but the thing is this: you you guys are involved in a spat that's been going on. How long have you been dating or together?
We've been together 7 years.
Well, you've been in the midst
of... And it'll be little things,
ongoing.
You know. I'm just trying to help other people.
Yeah, but you see, what I'm saying is, Eva, it doesn't start when you think it started. Usually, this is a skirmish in a war that's been going on for a long time. Because people are always trying to be right about their point of view, and they never listen to another person's point of view. They hear it, but they think about it, and they disagree or agree, so they're never really hearing another person's point of view.
Here's another possible thing to look at. You know, Shia can say something to me that's pretty straightforward, and I don't get upset. But if I'm already upset, he can say the same thing, and I have a different visceral response. And I think lots of times people don't recognize when they start battling with their partner that they're actually already upset about something. And if I take a step back even further, I find that there are certain people that I deal with or that I'm related to or relating with in my life that have an impact on how I feel about myself. So my ability to relate in a seamless manner with Shia can really shift depending on who I've been hanging around with or who I've been talking to on the phone. And I know that people may think, gosh, that's a little manipulatable or that's a little wishy-washy, Ariel, but I think people really underestimate how much they sync up with the people that they're around. It's part of how humanity survived, where we've learned to link and sync with the people in our environment. And if the people in our environment don't relate well, we often
pick up their way of doing it.
Right.
Makes perfect sense. So really, when you're talking to people and working with people, it's regardless of what the problem is, it's about them working on themselves.
Well, now slow down, because you see, it's not about working on. It's about bringing awareness to how you operate. And awareness is a non-judgmental seeing. But most of us have been trained in the cultures we grew up in to judge ourselves when we see something that doesn't work. Like, and work on ourselves. That's why our first book was called Working on Yourself Doesn't Work. Because
okay.
It does. See, now, let's talk about these three principles for a
okay.
second. First one is, anything you resist or say no to sticks around.
It's one of those laws of physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
So if you resist, say, your boyfriend, then what you resist will persist and it will grow stronger.
And that includes a style of communicating that your partner has. If you resist it, it just exacerbates it. Second principle is you can only be exactly as you are in any given moment, and that also includes all the people around you. They can only be exactly as they are in any given moment. And I know that we're all smart. So we have alternative ideas of how things could be, these fantasy better scenarios or fantasy futures or fantasies of how we could have done it better in the past. But if you really look at in a practical what is level, we could only be having this conversation with you right now. There are no alternatives to what actually is. You can only be exactly as you are in any given moment. And that's the second principle. And when people see that, shame falls away, blame falls away, guilt falls away.
Resentments, regrets, all of that. You develop compassion for yourself and others when you realize that we can only be exactly as we're being. And I'm not using that as a cop-out for not nice behavior. You know, if somebody does something that isn't nice, so they say, well, I could only have done that. Well, in one respect, yes, but we're big on personal responsibility in people's lives. You see, most people blame someone around them for how they feel, anybody who's close to them, because we've been trained to blame others or things outside ourselves. And Ariel and I operate as if we're responsible for how we're feeling. It isn't caused by our circumstances. The third principle is anything you notice, anything you see or observe without judging completes itself in an instant. So it's like you're walking down the street and you keep falling and you don't know why you're falling. And then one day you discover there's this thing, it's called a curb. Now, every time you see the curb, you just lift your foot. You don't fall anymore. It's that simple.
So it brings up, it makes me think of another situation that I have noticed with some young people today. Due to online dating, and we didn't talk about this before, but it's something that's just been brought to my attention. People are meeting each other from the other side of the world, particularly like soldiers and things. They're meeting people, you know, like somebody will live here in Atlanta, say, and they'll meet somebody living in Italy or Australia. Mm-hmm. And they fall in love online because we have Skype. We have different kinds of dating tools today. How do people who have different backgrounds and cultures learn to communicate and be effective in their relationships with words? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, Shai and I had a vastly different culture, although we did not meet online. He grew up in New York. I grew up in Oregon. His dad owned a dress factory in New York City. You know, my grandparents were farmers. I lived in the country. I mean, it was a we were vastly different. Shai is 17 years older than I am. And whilst it's not the same as people who have, say, different languages, Italian to American, we had a very vastly different everything from religion to geographical to everything.
I mean, in the culture I grew up in, there were no presents. In Ariel's culture, every holiday was the source of presents.
You know, birthdays, Christmas. For Shia, he never got presents. They just didn't do that. It wasn't part of his family. So I think one of the things that people that's really helpful is to recognize that my way isn't right, Shia's way isn't right. We just come from different cultures. And if you have the expectation that your partner's culture is going to mirror yours, you're in for a lot of upsets. So if you treat it more as an exploratory mission, and of course I let Shai know that I like presents. But as that went along, as our life has gone along together, that shifted. You know, my birthday was this week. I just turned 55. And I know that was just...
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And, you know, Shia did not get me a present, but I didn't even think about it. Shia's birthday was a little while ago, and I didn't get him a present. It just didn't occur to me because our culture has morphed into ours. And other years, if I'm feeling presentish, I'm like, I want a present. So we do that. There's something actually really exciting about the adventure of people from vastly different cultures. Because one of the things that happens is you discover that your reality isn't reality. It's just what you've been dipped in. And then you can look to see whether or not it's authentically you or just something you've been trained in.
There's this other thing, and it goes back to listening. Whenever Ariel speaks to me, I stop what I'm doing, and I monotask. I don't multitask. I stop, and I listen to what she's saying, and vice versa. So it's never that we're not paying attention to each other when we're talking to each other. Nothing we have to say is throwaway.
I don't even like to read an email to him. Like, if we get an email, if across the room. I'd prefer to have him closer so that we're actually engaged in what we're doing rather than he's involved in a task.
See, and most of us are so future oriented that no matter what we're doing, we're thinking about things we have to do or things we didn't do, and you know, so we have this very, very facile mind that is like a amazing computer that's constantly thinking about other things other than the current moment. And so our whole thing is coming back to now, this moment, and now this moment. So it's never that we're rushing to get somewhere. We're basically agenda-less. We operate by seeing what is needed and wanted, and we do that.
No, which doesn't mean that we are not very active and busy, of course, as you know, we've written these books. So, you know, we just got back last week from working a couple courses in Germany.
You say last week, it was Wednesday.
Oh, well, see, it seems like a long time
I mean, you know, but when you're living in the moment, time expands and contracts simultaneously. So what you did, we got back from Germany on Wednesday. I was thinking about it. It feels like months ago already.
Right.
Because so much has happened. If you're here in your experience of living with each moment, a lot happens. Most of us have the same old going on. But for people,
I would like to ask.
Moment says just now. Sorry, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I thought you were through, and then you started back, and so I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Now we're both sorry, but I forgive you and you forgive me. And we'll
I was listening.
That's how you handle arguments.
What you were just talking about reminds me of something that I read in a book, and I can't think of what the name is, but you'll probably know what it is. But it was talking about this woman who sat with her husband, and I may get some of the story wrong, but I think I get the gist of it right, sat with her husband all the time at night when he came home from work and watched sports games with him. But their marriage started falling apart until one day they went to therapy, and the therapist said, "What are you doing?" And, you know, the husband said, "Well, she doesn't communicate with me. She doesn't do things with me." She goes, "Yes, I do. I sit there with you and watch sports games every night." But she knits while she did it. So the husband took that as not paying attention, so she quit knitting, and her relationship got better. That could have even been your story. I don't know. But can you elaborate on why something like that would happen and then how that one little thing could make a difference in one's life, one's relationship?
I believe it could. It doesn't take big things to make a difference in your life. It's the little things that happen in the current moment of your life that make all the difference. If you're here to see it, feel it, experience it, that happens when you're engaged in what you're doing, not in other things. And a lot of people multitask.
Well, it actually happened to me tonight. I was out and about today. I took a long walk in town. I did a lot of things. And Shia was out doing some fly fishing, and I started to make dinner. And I had my audio book on. And I have my phone in my pocket because my book is loaded on my phone. And I had the earbuds in when he came in, and he said something to me, and I said hi back. And he said, "What are you listening to?" And in that moment, I realized that he'd come in, he'd said hello. I had actually answered him, but there was only like a mini me there that wasn't the full me there. So I immediately turned it off and said, I'm listening to an audiobook. Because it was like he, in that moment, became secondary. And it was just an odd thing because it's not how we normally operate. I think lots of people think that they don't have time for dates. But that time we spent in the kitchen while we finished up making dinner together was a date. Sometimes Sean and I take each other's hand and walk out to the mailbox. That's one of our favorite dates. You know?
Yeah.
Where we're really just being with each other.
There's another thing, Eva. Well, first off, I got to tell you something. I could listen to you forever. I love your voice. I love your accent.
Thank you.
It's true.
Somebody, that's interesting that you say that, because somebody the other day said to me, somebody that I had on one of my shows, I'm not going to say who it was, but they they call me the next day and said, I really enjoyed that show, you know, but you really need to work on your accent and be more like
anything. No, that's the problem. Everybody's got everybody else working on something rather than living their lives.
I remember when I was working as an actress, there was an agent once who told me, if you want to make it in this business, you need to take a nose job, a chin job. I'm like, shit, this whole, you got to change your hair. Right after that, I got work for 3 years on a soap opera. It's like
really?
People are always telling you stuff that's garbage. And, you know?
Well, now I got to ask, what was the soap opera?
It was All My Children. I had a small role on it for 3 years.
That's really cool. That's one of the ones I actually have heard of. I don't have a TV, but I've heard of that one. Okay.
I'm glad you haven't watched it because
you it is no more.
Oh,
yay.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
Well, yeah, otherwise.
Because if you watch those things, all you do is train yourself in bad habits.
Yeah. I won't get into that. I got hooked on Lost one time. That show Lost. I love it. The only time I've ever done that, though. Anyway, let's get back to your book.
Okay.
What if you have a relationship where the parents don't like your partner? What do you do?
Well, welcome to our world. I mean, Ariel's mother, when I asked for her hand, told me I was the worst mistake her daughter had ever made.
It was very, very contentious. You know, I was talking to my mom today, and she's like, tell Shia hi. Tell him I love him. You know, and she means it now.
But
back then, it was really a challenging thing. And it was important for me, multiple things. One thing that was important was for me not to surrender my truth, what was important for me, because she really tried to talk me out of getting married right up to the day before. But also, it was equally important that Shia didn't try to make me choose between him and them, that I have enough love to go around, and even if she was being disagreeable to him, he was, and it was challenging, really challenging, because sometimes she was very disagreeable. He didn't say, you know, them or me. And I personally think that takes a really big person. There also did come a point where I told her that, you know, she couldn't speak to him in that manner anymore, and we didn't speak for a period of time.
Her mother.
My mother and I, because I figured it was an interesting thing, Eva. This was my strategy. My strategy was at that point she wanted my love. I knew I had hers. I love her. But it was almost like training a child who had bad behavior where I couldn't reward it. And what was interesting was the 4 or 5 months that went by where we were so terribly strained. We didn't talk. She came to town because at that time my parents had a dress store in Oregon at the time. She came to town, and Shia and I looked at each other and said, why don't we call her and we'll go apologize. We apologized to her for stressing her because we hadn't listened to what she had to say on the day that she got very upset with us. She met us at the door of her hotel, shoved me aside, wrapped her arms around Shia's neck and said, I'm really sorry. It was the sweetest thing. But it was really important, multiple things, that we didn't fold, but we didn't get angry with her for being her. We just kept sticking to our truth. And ultimately, over time, Shia being the gentleman that he is, and being true to himself, they discovered who he really was, not the person they were afraid of, because he had all the wrong things going for him. He was older. He didn't have a steady job. He was divorced with 2 kids. You know, there are all these things that...
I had a steady job. It just wasn't a high-paying job.
Yeah, but they knew that you hadn't had... You'd worked different places in your history.
I lived in
and I had a motor, and he had a motorcycle, all those things that scare a parent. But all those things... And you know the other thing, Eva? At that time, I loved all that stuff. I was really at war with my mom in those days, so I had a lot of good leverage to bug her.
I had a lot of good traits. My bad traits were good traits.
Yeah, I've been there. I completely understand that.
But I grew up, and she no longer was the ogre.
Well,
so I didn't have to.
You grew up, and she grew up along with you.
Yep.
Because, you know, our parents frequently, well, always, there's a child in each one of those grown-ups, you know. So they behave or try to behave like grown-ups, but really there's a child in each of us. And we grew up.
You've been divorced. You have kids. How do you re-enter the dating world today? Because it's a different dating world. There's the, like I was talking about earlier, there's the online thing, and you hear these stories about people meeting people who really aren't real, or people meeting people under false pretenses. How do you get back out there?
By flirting.
Still safe.
Well, I tell you, I was off on a wilderness trail today by a river that runs through New Jersey near where we live, and there were any number of women who, if I were in the market, I could have
struck up a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like I noticed that they were interested. Now, look, I'm a young 72-year-old man.
If people go up on our website, and you'll see the pictures, it's actually current.
They're
he
current
doesn't
pictures.
Look 72.
No, I look like I'm in my mid-50s. But, you know, there were women, young women and middle-aged women and older women that were all attractive. And if you, you know, the answer is always no if you don't ask. So, you know, if you see somebody that you find attractive, you strike up a conversation and see where it goes from there.
I think a lot of people stop looking. They don't even just look. They don't, that shy, it's not unusual for me to hear shy have noticed the interest of people. I have friends who are single who never notice when somebody's interested in them. So first of all, you have to look. Secondly, you flirt everywhere, and I'm not saying flirting in necessarily to get a date with somebody, but if you extend yourself, I went in shopping today, and there was a mix-up with a gift card they'd given me, and I got to speak to a couple of the staff, and I got to speak to the manager, and you know, one was a guy, two were gals. And it was as if we were on little mini dates together. It wasn't as if I was trying to, you know, strike up a relationship that would go outside the store. But those little mini interactions are where any relationship starts.
You know, if you operate as though what's showing up in your life is exactly what's supposed to be there in this current moment, so then everybody is fair game to be interacted with. And if you interact with people and get interested in them, you become very interesting.
As I was walking through our town today, there is a area where it's a cigar bar.
Oh, I know
where all these guys were sitting and smoking their cigar. All I would have had to do was pause and say a sentence or two if I was single and looking. Or there were the people with their cup of coffee sitting outside of the coffee shop. And all I'd have had to say is, it's a nice day to be sitting out having your cup of coffee. It's simple. It's a lot simpler than people make it. And if you make it simple like that, then the online dating thing, if you're doing that as well, is easier.
So can you tell us, what are some things that people look for when there is a person interested in them at that first meeting. And, you know, if you're standing in line at the coffee at the Starbucks or whatever, how do you know when somebody would be interested in going out with you, or if they're just having idle chat because you happen to be standing in line next to them? How do you know?
Well, you don't, but if you interact with them like that you're interested in what they have to say and really listen, they'll probably get interested. The other thing is, we tell people to date, not mini-marry. See, most people are looking to the future with whoever they meet to see whether they are relationship material or marriage material. So they're not really just there with this person. They're putting them through their schematic of what the right man is supposed to be like or what the right woman is supposed to be like. So they're not just being with another person. They're judging them to see how they fit in with their template.
You know, there's different strategies. I happen to know of a young lady who went to the post office to buy stamps, and the machine ate her money. So she got one of the postal employees to help her, and she found him very attractive. And she actually
ended up marrying him.
She gave him her number. He called her. She had to be quite forward. I was very forward with Shia, even though we had flirted for a long time. Times have changed. I don't think you have to sit around and wait for the guy to ask you.
And that's the other thing. Date multiple people. This idea that you can only date one person at a time leaves you in deficit.
So then you think you're only lovable from that person rather than their people you enjoy their company.
You see, if you date enough people, you'll discover that you feel better around some people than other people. You feel smarter. You feel more self-fulfilled. And those are the people you end up wanting to hang out with rather than the person that you hang out with that you think if I let him or her go, then I'm alone again. So,
that makes sense.
It does, but it takes courage.
Well, when I met Ariel, she was dating about five guys.
I was busy.
She was busy.
But, you know, one of the things, Eva, I was very honest about it. I mean, Shia knew me because we'd been flirting. I worked at the chiropractic office that he came to. I volunteered at the office where he worked at. So we knew each other, at least peripherally. But I was very honest with him, and that's part of what really worked. We were very straightforward with each other. And by the way, he told me, oh, good, just keep going. Keep dating. At some point, you may need to make a choice, but for now, it's great. Because he really didn't want the pressure of me as an immediate girlfriend. Of course, that changed
that
on the
changed
first
a
night.
Lot on our first date.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I found out who she was on our first date, and that was it. I told her she was the one for me in this lifetime.
Aww.
And I said, okay. And then I thought about it. The next day, I thought, oh, my gosh, that's such an airhead thing to say. And I called him up and said, you know that thing you said? You shouldn't talk to me like that. And he said, fine, I just won't say it anymore.
So that reminds me, when we're talking about this, you know, how to talk to people. I used to be the shyest person you have ever laid your eyes on. I was the wallflower.
Mm-hmm.
People used to take it the wrong way that I was stuck up or something. But I didn't know how to start a conversation with somebody. I was so shy.
Me too.
I mean, it was painful. It was horrible. And when my kids started the Jewish day school, my youngest daughter, I met this woman there, and she talked to everybody. She was friends with everybody. She was involved in every charity, every thing. And I watched her, and one day she came up and started talking to me, and I realized what she did when she didn't know what to say to somebody was she would say, ask them about themselves. And the conversation would just take off, and she had more friends than she knew what to do with. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, was to learn how to start a conversation. So do you have any comments about how to do that?
Well, I love what you just said when about you. You said that she started a conversation with people about themselves, because I find, for me, it's very easy to start conversations, but mainly because I'm really interested in people. I find people fascinating. So wherever I go, it's easy for me to say, wow, nice dress, or I love your hair clip, or you look like you're having a great day, or even just hi. And it's being interested rather than putting a pressure on yourself to be interesting makes everything very easy.
So let's talk about, we have 20 minutes left, or thereabouts, 18 or 20 minutes. Let's talk about the topic, sex.
Sex, when, my favorite subject.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been told for a long time that we're supposed to be over it by now, but we're not over it yet.
So when you go back out there and you start dating, especially in today's world, you know, rampant with, what is that?
Sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you have to get honest. You have to speak to people. You have to ask them questions that are potentially embarrassing.
And how do you
need
that?
Protection. You need to use condoms until you're clear that both of you are being monogamous and are have been tested for sexually transmitted diseases.
That was my next question. So it's okay to tell people who, if you're going out with somebody, I'd like for you to go and get tested.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, look, it's like somebody walking around with a loaded gun. Whoops, I'm sorry, I didn't know. Well, let's find out.
I guess I kind of have a strange idea about it. Well, maybe it's not so strange, but I think of it as a person earning their right to full access to your body. It's one of the things you have to earn. I mean, we had to take a test in order to earn the right to legally drive a car, and that's less important than to be able to have full access to your body.
It's beautiful, I love it.
And I think it's, of course, it's an uncomfortable topic in a way, but if you can't be comfortable enough talking about it, maybe that's not a person that you should be having full intimacy with. Now, that's very easy for me to say now, because back in when I was much younger and I had a whole lot more hormonal drive and I was not yet with Shia, I was not super responsible about communicating. But for whatever reason, with Shia, from the get-go, we absolutely communicated about everything from, you know, the potentially communicatable diseases and all of that kind of stuff.
Okay, so let's talk about this question. When you get our age and beyond, I'm 53, men in particular, you know, their hormones tend to start winding down, and, you know, many people need to, you know, prostate issues, many people need to consider bioidentical hormones or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What, you know, I'd like for you to just talk about that and give men that once get into the world security.
Bioidentical testosterone.
But you know what?
And I have for a number of years now, because I noticed that my energy level and sex drive started diminishing in my late 60s. And so I spoke to our doctor.
And he started with supplements. You know, what are you missing? Vitamin D, you know, magnesium glycinate, different things. And we messed around with that for a bit. And then he tried them on bioidentical
testosterone.
But interestingly enough, Eva, I take bioidentical testosterone also. Very, very,
a very small,
minute
dose.
Amount.
About an eighth of what I take.
But a number of years ago, I lost all sexual feeling. And I'm like, oh, this is just wrong. You know, it was just so unfortunate to have an orgasm. I could feel the muscles doing the orgasm thing. But there was just, I'm like, I've been robbed. know.
But I was,
I went to my doctor, and we got a test, and I just had virtually no testosterone. And by taking a little bit bioidentical, just a little bit, it's returned me to normal, and it's like getting my life back again.
That's
so
wonderful.
I recommend that if somebody, male or female, if it's they're finding that their libido is dropped and they still have a desire for it, find a doctor or someone to talk to who can support you in that. And our first physician, family physician, that wasn't in their skill set. So we went looking until we found somebody who was good with that and who could make that prescription for us.
Well, I would like to comment on that. There is a laboratory, you know, I do, one of my passions is alternative medicine, and so I try to keep up with who's doing what and where and what's available to people. And there's a laboratory called Labrix, L-A-B-R-I-X, Laboratories, and it's run by a guy named Jay Mead, who now runs the John Lee Institute, who was one of the pioneers in bioidentical hormones. But you can get a kit from them and go to, like, any lab, you know, those, like, lab-in-a-box places.
Uh-huh.
You can go to one of those places and get one of these tests and just then have it sent to your doctor so your doctor can interpret it. It'll come back with what your deficiencies are and what you need and give you lots of information. And then there's another thing for men in particular. I interviewed this guy one time named Stephen Buhner, and he wrote a book, and I can't remember the whole name because it's been several years, but he's an herbalist and he's fabulous. He wrote a book about testosterone, and it's a red and green book, and across the front it, in big letters it says testosterone. And he said one of the best sources for testosterone is this product called Scott's Pine Pollen. And so it's I actually get it for my husband, and I can't find the words. It's a thing that they do. It's seasonal. That's the word. So they run out every year about March or April because they don't start collecting it until May. But it has more testosterone in it, according to Stephen, than anything else. And it's natural, and it's cheap, and you don't have to have a prescription. So I can't think of the name of the company, but if you Google Scott's Pine Pollen, let me do it real quick in my email so I can tell people this.
Scott's Pine Pollen?
Yeah, it's a particular kind of pine tree.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's and it works. I'm looking to see if I can't find the name of that company. Shoot.
Well, you know, you said the name, and people can go look it up.
Yeah, it's $16. I found the email. $16 for a 2-ounce bottle, and it's just Scott's Pine Pollen. I can't find the name of the company now, but that'll give them an idea. So anyway. So you've got about 8 minutes. Talk about anything you want to talk about.
Well, you got Ariel writing down the pine pollen thing.
I love information.
Woodlandessence.com.
Say that again?
Woodlandessence.com. And then the guy, Stephen Buhner, it's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, and B-U-H-N-E-R, I think. A great book. I mean, he's got lots of books, including a book that his most recent book. It's an updated and revised version, so if you go and look for this, make sure you get the updated and revised version. But it's a book about herbs that will treat any antibiotic-resistant bacteria. With these herbs, you can treat anything out there. So, anyway, it's a great book.
Cool.
A lot of his stuff's good. So, anyway, go back to your, anything
you
want to talk about.
I like the idea of not getting sick. So you don't have to treat it with something. You know, we've spent the last number of years really putting a lot of attention on our physical well-being. And, you know, I had a very severe heavy metal poisoning that I didn't realize I had. I was just feeling terrible for a number of years and couldn't get rid of it, you know. Nothing worked. And then I found out that I had lead and mercury poisoning, aluminum poisoning. And so we've been doing chelation.
Chelation.
And taking, what would you call them?
Supplements.
Supplements,
yeah.
That
mm-hmm.
bind with the heavy metals and get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been better shape now, much better shape now than I was 7 years ago.
You know, there's that brings up another thing. There are some labs, SpectraCell is one of them, SpectraCell. You can get a micronutrient test there. You can get a heavy metal test there. You can get a cardiovascular test there. I had testing done there 7 or 8 years ago just to do a radio interview. They did tests on me so we'd have something to talk about.
Right.
If I had have listened to them and to this other woman, Amy Yatsko, that does some genetic, methylation testing, if I'd have listened to these two tests that I had probably 8 or 9 years ago when everybody was saying this stuff was crazy and the doctors would say, oh, it's not reliable, if I'd have listened, I would not have had a heart attack back in September. Because this happened about 2 weeks ago. I was sitting in my office and I thought, why don't you go back and look at those tests done by SpectraCell and by Amy Yasko. That's Y-A-S-K-O, by the way. And I went and dug them out and I looked at them. I went, oh my God. Every single thing on those tests, everything was 100% accurate. From my moods to headaches that I've had since the seventh grade, to my heart disease, everything was 100% correct. And if I'd just listened and taken the actions that I'm taking now that those tests indicated, I wouldn't have had a massive heart attack.
Well, you see, Eva, listening really helps.
Well, you know
I was just doing an interview, sharing with people, but I didn't take my own advice and listen.
Well, I think lots of times people underestimate something because it just sounds unreliable or they don't know or it's not enough. And that's why Shai was talking about really taking on the perspective of somebody you're listening to test it, to see if it's true, rather than just
find fault with it and out of hand disregard it.
And then move on to the next thing.
I'll tell you what Ariel and I do is nothing short of miraculous. And by that I mean we've discovered how to have people find their way into the current moment of their lives. And that is amazing because most of us have been lost most of our lives trying to get to what we think is going to make us happy. And if you're not happy in the current moment, it doesn't happen.
You know, you're better, Eva, with statistics and hanging on to data and details than I am, but I know that I have read studies where people will live likely up to 7 years longer if they are in a relationship that is not embattled. And I think that being able to relate and relate well with the person that you're in relationship with, but mainly with yourself, is key to having a life that's harmonious.
If you're upset and agitated, it's not caused by the people around you. It's always caused from within. And, you know, people all talk about world peace like, sure, I'm for world peace, but they're at war in themselves. So it's one of those things that if there's ever going to be world peace, it starts with you. Each of us.
And I got to tell you, that was the launching point. Even though Shai and I loved each other, we were very compatible in all ways. The moment he realized the second principle, that he couldn't be any different than he was in the current moment, so he should stop, he realized he could stop picking on himself, that there was no reason to pick on himself, that he could only be the way he was, and something in him relaxed. And he stopped picking on me by extension. And I have to tell you, I immediately became more me, more articulate, smarter in myself, more enabled to go about my day. You empower the people around you by giving yourself the chance simply to be yourself and to not have to apologize for being you.
And you see, most people don't know who they are except in either opposition or agreement to their parents. So most of us use our parents as touchstones, and we either disagree or resist certain ways that they are to identify ourselves. But, you know, if you want to find yourself, it can't be in resistance to somebody or something, you know?
You know, people want to take a look and see what people have to say about our book. They can go up to our website, transformationmadeeasy.com. They can go read the reviews up on Amazon. I'm very touched by what people have to say. We have a YouTube channel, Transformation Made Easy. I'm sensing a theme. Our
yes.
Facebook page is Transformation Made Easy. I love the people who are in our community, people who we've gotten a chance to know or people who write into us. I love people like yourself who are looking for what's possible. You can still have an active, passionate interest in having an excellent life and what's possible without working on yourself. Working on yourself doesn't work, but being here and being passionate about it does.
So take a couple minutes and tell us what your website is, and do you do webinars? Can people find you? You know, how do people connect with you?
We don't currently do webinars. People connect with us by being on our email list. We have a radio show on the internet. It's live on Wednesday.
We've had it for more than five years now.
Yeah, noon on Wednesday, so people call in and ask questions. We have an online subscription series called the Premium Excellence Club, where people sign up for a year and they get to watch videos of us working with people each week in their inbox. It's a nominal amount of money, and it's very powerful. You can find all that on transformationmadeeasy.com, and they can find out all the different ways to reach us. Mainly
so,
people fly into New York. That's mainly where we work.
Do you have anything new and coming up?
Just the next moment.
Well, you know, we do a new article each month. That's when people do get on our email list. We send out an article. We send out a video of the month. We send links to the radio show. We don't have any, you know, we are loosely working on a book right now, but it's going to be a while before that comes. So.
Okay. I was talking to somebody the other day that said they had a new book coming out. I couldn't remember if that was you or somebody else. I just wanted to bring it to the attention if you did.
Yeah, well, thank you.
No, it wasn't us, because we've decided to let ourselves live a little now, because writing a book is all-consuming, especially
is.
When you're doing it along with all the other things we do. And
certainly
so
is. I have a new book that just came out, and, man, it takes up every moment, spare time that I have.
Yeah.
So,
we
got 1 minute, so I can't probably talk about much, but being alone, how do you deal with that?
I was alone a lot today, and I liked myself. You like yourself. Being alone is an exquisite adventure.
That's true.
So,
be kind to yourself. If you're kind to yourself in your thoughts, you know,
that's where it goes.
Where it begins.
And by the way, that makes you very attractive.
Yeah. People don't find complaining people attractive. They find interested people attractive.
That's a
not
very
interesting. Interested.
It's a very good point. So if you're alone and you don't have, and it's 8:59, so we have about 45 seconds. You don't have anybody. What do you do?
Take
Love
care of
yourself.
You know,
liking yourself, and people will start liking you.
Very briefly, I cleaned out my closet today, and that was such a kind thing to do, and it was taking care of me, and I liked me all the more for it.
Excellent. All right, guys, one more time. Where's your website? Where can people find you?
TransformationMadeEasy.com.
Thank you, Ariel and Shira. You're always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Eva.
Eva,
have a good one.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Good night.
Bye.